So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lo.
And today we're also joined by our podcast producer, Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. We are going to be chatting about a whole bunch of stuff this week, but it's kind of a crazy week because I thought it was just going to be, hey, E3, let's wrap up E3 into a nice little package. And then out of nowhere, a leak of Windows 11, at least a very early build, dropped on the internet. Screenshots went everywhere. We got our hands on it. You know, I got some time with it. So we will be talking about all this stuff and, you know, the Windows 11 leak leading up to next week's Windows event, which is going to be the official debut. As always, if you're enjoying the Engadget podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. And, you know, drop us an email at podcastengadget.com if you have any questions. And you can join us Thursdays, typically around 10 a.m. Eastern. We record live on our Engadget YouTube channel, so you can join us for Q&A and hands-ons. You can actually see the hands-ons with the Windows 11 leak if you come check out this episode, too. So let's move right on to this Windows 11 thing, which I think is pretty freaking wild. I can't remember the last time, especially ahead of like a major launch event, when an entire OS just appeared online. I think the first thing we saw was a couple screenshots from a user on Baidu, you know, the Chinese social network, where a lot of stuff tends to drop there. And then gave it a couple hours and the ISO, the actual installation disk, appeared on the internet. And people wasted no time downloading that and installing that. I got my hands on it too. So I, as somebody who's installed Windows many, many times, that was a really interesting experience to get this thing out of nowhere. It kind of reminded me of like the Windows XP days, to be honest, when everybody was pirating Windows XP and I would just fish around the internet for free copies of XP, because that was my college life, everybody. Sherlyn, I don't know if you have this experience of like trying to find free Windows back in the day.
I had experience trying to find free Microsoft Office back
in
the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not the whole OS, but like some of the apps. And yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we all had our ways. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But part of the fun is in the hunt. No,
it's the hunt. Hunt is fun. Yeah. I mean, this is we should have a whole episode about like finding illicit, like,
for me, illicit it was just stuff on key the generators. But yes,
key generators, all the fun stuff. Hey, this is you know, semi-legal stuff. The statute of limitations is over. Let's talk about this Windows 11 leak though, because it is kind of wild. So the history here, I think, is that if you look at it first glance, it looks a lot like what we were hearing about Windows 10X, that dual screen version of Windows that Microsoft was talking about 2 years ago. Last year, they said, maybe not dual screen. Those devices aren't ready. So they started saying Windows 10X, maybe more for single screen devices. And then a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago, Microsoft officially killed Windows 10X ahead of build, I believe. So that idea, they said those features would be going into Windows 10 proper, future versions of Windows. It looks like what happened is that sometime in the last year, somebody was like, hey, it's been 6 years since Windows 10 came out. Let's just do another one. And what we're seeing here is kind of this new refined, polished follow-up to Windows 10. Some of the big things I think you'll notice at the beginning, the taskbar is centered in the middle of the screen. So that is kind of that's interesting. That's just a different change for Windows. I think I'll be doing a hands-on video and a piece later today about this too. But it feels a lot like Mac OS X right now, which is weird.
It looks a lot like Mac. Yeah.
It's like Mac, right? Because now the taskbar is all icon-focused. I am the sort of person, I'm the sort of Windows nerd where I always like having a little title bar or a little, you know, a little label next to all my Windows on the taskbar. You cannot do that in Windows 11, at least right now. So yeah, they're finally forcing you to stick with the icons, which is, I think, something Microsoft started doing that around Windows 7 is when they went icons first, but you always had the option to turn on titles. That's gone. So I think the result now is like a cleaner interface, and it's centered. It's a little more OS X-like or OS Mac OS-like. And the start menu also got some changes too. It looks very different. It looks
Question, from what I'm seeing on this screen capture that you're sharing, the start menu is no longer like off to the left. At least the start button is no longer all the way off to the left. Everything is in the center.
You can push it back to the left. So you can push the entire taskbar back to the left, but again, it's still just going to be icons. So there are some options I'm showing there.
I see. Okay. Go ahead. You were talking about the start menu. It does look pretty
start
different.
Start menu is different too. So I think the last time Microsoft changed the start menu was Windows 8, and everybody, it was like the meme. Nobody liked that. Nobody wanted that. So in Windows 10, they tried to give us a full screen start menu. They were trying to push Windows as this like tablet hybrid OS, and you know, it's good for touchscreens and everything. Nobody liked it. So in Windows 10, Microsoft went back to the traditional start menu, you know, a thing that just pops up, has all your apps, maybe has a couple shortcuts. They added live tiles to Windows 10 start menu. This one is a little cleaner, I'd say. Like when you hit the start menu, there are shortcuts for pinned apps, basically. There's a selection of suggested apps at the bottom, and then there's a button to hit where you see all your apps. So that's the entire start menu. I think that's going to be a big change for a lot of people. I hate sifting through the start menu. I haven't done that in years. So I do think this shift away from giving you the full uncluttered, the full cluttered mess of your start menu is probably smart. Typically, I just hit the Windows key and like start typing an app.
That's
how I get to everything. And I think the pinned apps shortcuts at the top, that's just for like the things where you just hit frequently and you just don't want to type. So this is overall like... between this and the taskbar, I think it's an overall cleaner interface. I should say, I've heard from a source that should definitely know what's up here. This is an incomplete early build of Windows 11. So if this is not doing it for you, expect a lot more features when Microsoft fully announces it next week. So this is just like a glimpse.
Were you told in what ways it might be incomplete?
No.
Okay.
No one's going to say more than, hey, this isn't everything, guys. Don't worry about it.
Dev, talking about the way that you and I use the start menu, by the way, there is a question in our live chat from Sunday McCall that says, I hope they fix the Windows search. Now, I think they're like referring to something that I've personally encountered. And that is sometimes when I type into the start menu, which, by the way, not necessarily the Windows search here, because you might be also talking about the File Explorer. But okay, when I type into the search menu, I can type P-H-O. And then I get the first shortcut, like, and I hit return, and that's like Photoshop, right? But I hit P-H-O-T, and it's a Photos app. So like, it feels like that seems a little like a weird search algorithm going on there.
It doesn't feel any different to me. It feels exactly the same as Windows 10 at this point. So I don't know. Let me just say one other thing that I noticed here that is really interesting is that you know how you can like drag a window to different corners of the screen and it'll like snap it to different sides. So Microsoft added this shortcut. If you hover above the maximize icon in the top right of your screen, you will see this quick drop down shortcut of just different snap points. So from that drop down, you could like snap all the way to the left or snap all the way to the bottom right. And it's a small change. But I think it could actually be a big deal because I hate manually resizing windows and I hate like the auto snapping doesn't always work. It's kind of frustrating. So for me, especially when I'm multitasking, I have an ultra wide monitor here. I just want to like, boom, go in the top right. Boom, go on the left side. You can easily manage all these screens you're working on in a simple way. So again, this feels like a really nice decluttered Windows and, to be honest, I like that a lot better than anything Apple has ever done with macOS, because macOS Windows Management is a huge pain. Come at me, bros. I hate it. I hate it. The only ways I can use Macs is if I use Apple's Exposé feature, which, you know, blows up all the windows and can show you all the windows for an app or all the windows you have open. This, I'm just really digging this interface so far. There's rounded corners on the windows, too. A couple like system icon changes, some different sounds. It's a small refresh, at least from this build.
What do you like most about it, I guess?
I think other I than like the that
squircles.
The squircles are nice. It feels cleaner. I do think, listen, my taskbar is usually a chaotic mess, okay? And that's how I've lived with Windows since Windows 95, you know, since they introduced the taskbar. So I'm just used to that. But having, you know, seeing Windows in a slightly more clean way. This reminds me of the way like some Linux variants also looked back in the day. This is a little like BOS.
Yes.
It's cleaner. It's all icons. The icons are higher resolution. There's some new art throughout it too. I think it's just like it feels more modern, which is nice, but I'm sure there's going to be a big backlash to this new start menu.
I mean, I like that you can still put it back to the left. Yeah. I don't know if it's me being stupid enough to never have disabled this, but I'm looking at my own taskbar now, right? Mm-hmm. And it's cluttered as hell. I have the Cortana button, which I can obviously disable, but I also have a wide-ass search bar that's taken up a third of the space. So it's like cluttered AF. And then, I mean, all my system, I like my systems indicators on the bottom right, so I'm not going to touch them, but... Those I also have like a dozen apps open.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad it looks like Windows kept them around for Windows 11 based on this leak anyway. But it does look a lot cleaner, like you said. I don't know how much like disabling of things like the Cortana button and the search bar I might have to do. Right. But if I can achieve that simplicity and that cleanness of that look I'm seeing on our screen share right now, then that'll be nice.
What we're looking at right now, by the way, there is like a widget button to give you widgets on the left side of the screen. I feel like they tried to do that around Windows 8. They kind of went away from it in Windows 7. Yeah. So widgets are back. They're fine so far. You don't have to engage with them if you don't want. But it's just like another thing that's there. I do kind of like widgets when, like, just show me the weather. What's next on my calendar? Just give me the basic stuff so I can move on with my life. But I'm not going to sit there and stare at widgets, you know?
I'm not going to devote screen space to it. I like, I think there were either some apps or this was built into the OS way back when there was like a gray, not gray, translucent black box on the right where you could put things like, like you said, the weather. And then for me, it was like a to-do list up there too. And then, like you said, calendar too. But I don't like cluttering up screen space anymore.
So, it's nice. Listen, I'm sure a lot is going to be different. The official Microsoft event is going to be next Thursday, June 24th. Mm-hmm. And we're actually going to record the podcast a little later next week. We're going to start at 12:30 p.m. Eastern because we want to see what this Microsoft news is. And then we will officially talk about all that. So I'm also producing a hands-on video for Engadget. So you'll find that on our YouTube channel by the time you can download and listen to this podcast. So, you know, go check that out. Go check out my article about it. Drop us some questions. And if you have any things you want us to look out for the official release of Windows 11, or at least the official announcement, drop us a line at podcastinggadget.com. Let's move on to some highlights from E3. If you guys have been checking out our YouTube channel over the past week, we have been doing a lot of live streams for all the major events. So like Ubisoft's E3 event and Xbox and Microsoft. And it was me, Jessica Condit, and Matt Smith, our UK bureau chief. We kind of all just broke down and followed these things live. Overall, it was a pretty... It was a interesting show just because there were certainly a lot of big games. It didn't feel to me as impressive as going to a live E3, you know, like actually being able to get hands-on time with the games. So this is all just a way for developers to show off. But it was cool. And I think you had a really good takeaway too, Sherlyn, right? Just in terms of what you noticed for closed captioning.
Yes. So, I mean, we can quickly talk about that before diving into all the game stuff. I think because it's important. So as of day three of E3, which was, I want to say Tuesday or Monday, Monday, because over the weekend it was fine. Monday was like day three of E3, and closed captionings were a garbled mess. Closed captions were a garbled mess. If you turned them on, you were, you know, watching them, you were hard of hearing, deaf, or just wanted to watch without the sound, you will have noticed that like the closed captioning was awful. There was like... There's an article on Engadget.com you can go look at for screenshots of how bad these were. None of the words made sense. Metroid Prime was Mroid Prime. Tony Hawk Skater Pro was NY Hawkstar. Guitar Hero was Guitar Ho.
Do you think people were like, was it a live typer or was it automatic? You think?
So Aaron Supores, our executive editor, started to notice this and he pinged me to go take a look. And we looked at it and we were like, oh, okay. I was like, is it only on Twitch or is it also on YouTube? So it was happening on both platforms. And then we hit up the ESA, which is the Entertainment Software Association that, you know, organizes E3. And we were like, hey, what's up with your closed captions? Who does it? Is it AI? Is it manual? And can you give us all these answers? So they did explain after a few hours. They were like, so yes, we hire a manual like a team of trained manual captioners. So these are human stenographers that are supposed to do this. And then I also at the same time started talking to our very own Dennis Skarna on the streaming team, because he's very familiar with closed captioning technology. And he was explaining to me how it worked. So human streamers get an encoding box to type the captions into from a feed that they're also given of the audio. And, you know, that gets fed back to the organization's streaming infrastructure. So there's a whole process here. Mm-hmm. It's not like as simple as they're typing directly into YouTube and whatever they type just shows up, right? There's a bunch of channels it feeds through. And it's important to bring this up because it doesn't, you know, even though they did employ human captioners, it's not necessarily human error that was leading to this chaos of captions. It was really, it seemed like possibly corrupt data somewhere in the streams in the transfer that might have been lost. And basically, it was very bad for the whole day on E3 Day 3, and also for part of the day on day 4, because I started getting, after the article published at the end of the day on day 3, on day 4, Jesus, people were still telling me. They were like, this shit is bad. So look, it's hard. It's manual captioning is a tough job. Let's not, I mean, I thank everyone that's doing this job. It can be thankless. It's really hard to keep up with fast talkers and crosstalk.
And it sucks when like all of that, the platforms you're working on don't support your hard work. And I know, we know what that's like when like we're working hard and like our CMS falls apart. So it is the tools that is often the problem, right?
So a quick shout out to all closed captioners, stenographers, transcribers out there. We see you. We appreciate your hard work. In this case,
we read you.
It looked like, we read you. Yeah. It looked like it was indeed, again, corrupt data, but ESA hasn't really got an explanation as to what was happening just yet. The other thing is we could have used maybe AI, I guess, for live closed captioning, but AI captions are imperfect. They're not that reliable just yet. And human, you know, captioners are often better.
Would it be more imperfect than this? Like the thing?
Well, this situation.
Like
I spoke again. Dennis Skarna said that like even if, he didn't say this, but if it was corrupt data, an AI captioner would have struggled too, right? Because if it was the feed that the AI was listening to that was garbled, the AI would have transcribed it wrong too. Like, let's say you take out the Google Recorder app and the audio that the recorder app is listening to is already like jumbled up. It's going to transcribe jumbled up shit. But we don't know exactly what happened. We still are waiting on the ESA to explain.
I do think like in a few years, like maybe some of these systems will get simplified. Like just from what we're seeing when it comes to automatic transcription services that are coming to things like Microsoft Teams and other solutions, like some of that stuff seems downright magical in terms of how it's interpreting human voice and getting it down. So yeah, I hope we get better with this in general. This seems like a really basic error they made here. And we still don't know what the issue is, right?
Yeah, I will. I want to shout out our very own captioner for this podcast on our YouTube stream that they're doing a great job. and the captions that came out of E3's live stream, we're not good. Again, I don't want to blame any human person here because A, it's a very difficult job. B, it's very thankless. And C, it might not even have been their fault. But E3, the ESA should have paid better attention to this, because the point that I was making in that article is that people who are deaf, people who have disabilities, are gamers too. They should be part of the conversation. And this is just not, it's like you can't overlook this.
It's not
great. Excuse me. So, that was an interesting thing that you know, caught our attention, and I'm glad we were able to jump on it.
Definitely. I think you were the only one writing about that too. So yeah, this is your, it's a little scoop for you. Yeah. Cool.
It was congrats. Nice.
We covered a lot of games too. So many games. I'm not going to list them here, but I'll say some of the notable things. And this whole E3 week kind of kicked off with the Summer Games Festival Showcase, which technically was not part of E3. I forget how all that works, because we know like Summer Games Fest is basically competing directly with everything the ASA does. So they're kind of frenemies right now. But I think the big reveal at that one was Elden Ring, the next game from Software, which looks cool. It looks so basically like, it actually looks more like Demon Souls rather than Dark Souls, but you got a horse, you're moving around. So it's like Shadow of the Colossus meets Demon Souls.
I really liked their last major game, Sekiro, which was more like you were a ninja, just hopping around killing people. I am hit or miss with the Souls games, to be honest. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not just that they're hard, but I do think, like, sometimes they're so punishing that I just feel so, I don't know, dejected by playing them. But I know many people who love it. And this looks really cool. This looks like a dark take on, like, a Legend of Zelda game, even.
Yeah.
Or, like, more like Shadow of Colossus. Like, you still got big enemies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what struck me about this is when I read about it on our website, the George R.R. Martin's involvement in
doing the story. Yeah. He's doing anything except writing the last book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Everyone's like
George, from him.
Apparently he went on vacation to like some sort of island getaway or something. And people were like, George R.R. Martin, get to work. Finish your book.
Stop writing games.
But yeah, apparently he worked on the story or the mythology behind this too. So it looks really cool. I like me some dark fantasy. I need to like really pore over the soldier. I love the scale of their enemies and their worlds and everything. I'm sure it looks cool to you, Sherlyn, but I want to know how you feel when you play one of these things, because just the sheer level of like frustration and anxiety I feel playing these games is really hard to like deal with. Anyway, Super Horse. The horse can fly or jump really high too.
What platform can I play Elden Ring on?
I believe it'll be PS5. I don't think it's an exclusive, but it's going to be next gen.
It should be
PS5, maybe Xbox Series X. I got to double check here. But given how big this game and how good it looks, like, yeah, you're going to need new hardware for this. It looks really cool. I cannot wait to play it. And I think after this video, the trailers for it were leaked. So there were like crummy bootleg copies of it floating around for a while. It is really nice to see this game running, you know, the actual full hardware. And it looks cool. It just looks so cool. Big enemies, lots of cool designs. I have to say, like, it is one of my favorite series is Berserk, and also the author of that series recently passed away, so rest in peace. Berserk, dark medieval, dark fantasy. Berserk was doing dark fantasy, you know, before Game of Thrones was even like a thing, and I think it helped to like cement it as a genre. So all these Souls games have been very Berserk. This one looks the most Berserk, and I'm really digging it. So Elden Ring should be pretty cool.
Nice. I'll check it out. But there were some other games, and I'm personally more interested in horror games. We can get to that later, but there were other E3 events, right?
Yeah. Oh, and they're saying PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X. It is going to be old. Yeah, early platforms too.
Nice.
There were many other games. I covered the Ubisoft showcase with Just Condit too. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of big ones. The main one we were expecting to hear more about was Rainbow Six Extraction, which was originally called Rainbow Six Quarantine. And they probably had to change that name. it is a Rainbow Six game that takes place in a world that has basically been infested by aliens. Or it seems like, aliens are going off. And the thing about Rainbow Six is that typically it's like realistic squad military type stuff. This one is more like fantastical. So there's a lot going on here. I think it looks like it's you and a bunch of players against aliens, and you're doing group missions similar to like Destiny. The design looks cool. I think
it does.
As one of the first games we saw this year, it also cemented the like thing we were going to see, which is monsters that look like zombie-like, but also creepy, like Last of Us monsters. So like creepy Last of Us monsters seems so many games are going with right now. The game looks cool. There's some like stealth and big shooty elements, but I don't know when last I've really liked a Rainbow Six game. So it looks cool. Would you play something like this, Sherlyn?
So I was going to say, right, like, is it online multiplayer or is it like local multiplayer?
It's online. I don't even know if there's a local mode in this, but this is online. You squat up with a bunch of people and you just go on missions. You go like this. You go out like clear out an alien nest or something.
Nice. That's where I get nervous because I know I'm really bad or whatever. Just go around getting killed.
The best part, is playing with you, Sherlyn. Like, that would be the thing. But yeah, lots of different monsters. I think it looks cool. It is really good use of the Rainbow Six, like, technology. Mm. They have a lot of good stealth tech and a lot of gadgets. So I'd be interested in seeing how this works out. I'm just not super excited for this. Similarly, I'm not that excited for Far Cry 6 because it is taking that game and that universe, the Far Cry universe, to a Latin American island, which is literally just Cuba, you know, and the villain is Giancarlo Esposito, because of course he is. He's the villain. I feel like four different TV series right now, slash movie. Mm-hmm. So he is everywhere. He's kind of doing his thing. I was really into what Ubisoft was trying to do with Far Cry 5, where it was an exploration of cults and white supremacy, even in America. Like it was an exploration of like nationalistic cults. I sat down and I talked with like a cult expert that Ubisoft had got to was working with on the game. The actual game didn't actually reflect any of that really interesting stuff, and it felt really waffly, and like it didn't actually say anything about the fact that, hey, America, we have a serious problem with like these weird nationalist cults that are building up guns and attacking people. And like, it's a thing we're not really talking about. But Far Cry 5 did nothing to really explore it. Far Cry 6, meanwhile, looks like it is pitting you among a group of revolutionaries trying to topple over this this island dictator. But Ubisoft is saying the game isn't political because there's nothing political about a band of rebels trying to defeat. Yeah, anyway, I'm trying to fight an oppressive government. It's all very dumb. I don't think Ubisoft has much to say at this point, but it looks cool as a drama thing. I like Giancarlo Esposito, you know?
I was going to say, I think I saw he was on the stream, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was video chatting with the Ubisoft people. So that's a thing. That's happening. Something I think you would be interested in, Trillin, is Rocksmith Plus. Oh. It's basically straight up, it's a game that lets you use an actual guitar and it will teach you how to play guitar. So think of like, it is the ultimate evolution of what we were seeing from like the Guitar Hero days. Rocksmith is a thing Ubisoft has had for a while.
Yeah.
But this Rocksmith Plus, it is a subscription service you pay for. It will help you. It will help teach you how to play guitar in a realistic way with real instruments. Like you can use an existing guitar if you have it. I think your phone can be used as like a microphone to kind of follow along. And then, yeah, you could play gamey stuff and it teaches you real chords. It teaches you actually, you know, how to deal with the strings properly. I'm really interested by this.
I'm looking at the interface of the trailer right now. It does seem a little like not DDR, but almost Beat Saber-y in that like you're hitting the chords in accordance to what's flying at you on the screen.
And that's Guitar Hero. Like that goes all the way back.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Hero. Yeah.
Exactly. I completely forgot that the exact same interface existed on Guitar Hero too. Yeah. Plus Rock Band. I gave up learning actual guitar a long time ago because my fingers just can't do those chords. I'm a piano player, but here we go. That's a fun one, I think, for anyone that wants to learn guitar. No?
Okay, we got a lot of games to run through here. So I'll briefly say, hey, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. That is a new version of that weird ass thing that Nintendo and Ubisoft are doing where they basically let Ubisoft build a Mario game with their weird, freaky rabbits creatures, Rabbids. So look, it is another tactical RPG. It's a follow-up to Mario plus Rabbids. I like the first game. I think you have a Switch, Trillin, so you can actually play the first game. It is really weird, but also stays true to being Mario. So that's cool. Okay. I'm down with that. And also, like, their big reveal. Their big reveal was an Avatar game. Avatar.
Oh, boy.
Remember Avatar?
Yes. Yeah, that blue.
The James Cameron movie, The Blue People. It was funny. I was watching this trailer with Jess, and it took her until the end of the trailer when they put the name Avatar up, they'd be like, huh, an Avatar game. Nobody remembers this movie. Nobody remembers these creatures.
I do.
And these people.
They're making a sequel.
They're making many sequels, but they've been making many sequels for over 5 years now. So, yeah. So we'll see. I feel like this is a game that is coming out because the sequel, Avatar 2, is supposedly going to come out next year. I have a feeling this game will arrive even before the movie arrives. It looks cool, but it also looks exactly like if I imagined a Horizon Zero Dawn or something with the Avatar universe. Like, I don't see anything new here. So it's fine. I don't I don't know. Let's move on to Microsoft, because they talked about some really interesting things, especially around xCloud, which I think would excite you, Sherlyn. The news that they're going to be building xCloud streaming sticks. And officially launching xCloud Game Pass streaming from PCs and mobile devices. So you can do it, Trillin. You can subscribe to Xbox All Access and just get a controller and play some games over the internet.
I'm
Are you going to do it? Are there any games that you think you'd be hopping to play at this point?
Any horror game ever, I will play. Demon's
and they've
Souls
got a lot of good horror.
Too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know. Resident Evil, not Resident Evil. Forget. I've been waiting to play that Alien Resurrection game for so long now.
I think that's on there. I think that is actually on there because of all these licensing deals. So yeah, Alien Resurrection is very good. Microsoft last week, even before their Xbox and Bethesda game showcase, basically announced a lot of hardware news. So it seems like xCloud is getting a big push. But the actual showcase started with a demo of Starfield, the next game from Bethesda. What was funny is that, I don't know if you noticed this, Rolyn, but I think a couple hours before the Xbox event started, the Washington Post leaked the video. Because they had it. They had like an exclusive piece on it. They leaked the video on their platform and kind of spoiled all of it. We still don't know what Starfield is, but they're describing it as sort of like a Han Solo simulator, a game where you could be a space rebel or bounty hunter and travel all over the place and have the freedom to move around. It looks cool. I like space games. NASA meets like futuristic fantasy stuff, like who knows how it's gonna go, but it's been a while
game.
It's been a while since Elder Scrolls Skyrim. We know they're working on like what, a sixth for another Elder Scrolls. This is going to be Bethesda's next big game, and I am hyped for it, even though I feel like every major space game we've gotten over the last few years, like what was the other one, No Man's Sky, launched like terribly, and it took a while for it to like get up to speed. I hope this one launches with everything being good. And yeah, it's coming out 11/11/22. So
okay, a while to go.
A year and a half away, but I do feel like this could be the next Cyberpunk if they don't. Everyone is hyped for this. So if they don't get the launch right, it could feel like another Cyberpunk. Yeah. But anyway, so many games. I'm just going to quickly shout out a couple other things. Halo Infinite, they showed us a bit more of single player, a bit of the multiplayer. Have you ever played a Halo game, Sherlyn?
When I was super young and my cousins didn't let me play because I was so bad, but I did play a little bit here and there. I jumped around a little bit.
Jumped around. I have not liked what 343 has been doing with the Halo franchise. So they've had over a year extra with this game. Like, it's been delayed for a year. This was supposed to be pretty much a launch season title. It's not coming till the end of this year. I think the multiplayer stuff they're showing off looks cool, just like graphically. I do miss Halo multiplayer. I just hope their campaign is good. Flight Simulator is a game that I think a lot of people were digging. That's going to be on Game Pass 2, I believe. It's going to be on Game Pass. I'm not sure if it's on xCloud streaming, but I feel like this is a good game that a lot of people are going to enjoy.
It looks so pretty.
Yeah, it looks pretty. And it's coming out in July, too. So not very long. I think the thing I was super excited about, though, out of all the games, is Forza Horizon 5, which you've probably heard of the Forza series. It's their like simulation racing game. Forza Horizon is an open world game where you could just like drive anywhere, go to a lot of different environments. Ooh. Forza Horizon 5 is going to be set in like a Mexican town or locale. You could drive through a village, which I'm sure the villagers don't appreciate. You could drive through the like desert areas, and you can even like drive around an active volcano. The trailer for this thing, I noticed this game won the most anticipated award at E3 the other day. The trailer for this showed off like the sheer level of detail involved with these environments. So you could see like every single blade of grass in the ground, or like the individual petals on a flower. There's so much detail in this world, even though you'll be driving by it really quickly. I'm shocked. I love this series. It's a good combination of like open world fun and music, and just like it's very chill. They're going to have expeditions for you to like do missions in this open world environment. So I'm digging it. I'm very happy about it.
Definitely looks very good. Like Flight Simulator 2, but I'm not a big driving games girl, but the expeditions might be fun.
Yeah, it looks cool. Just graphically, like the things, all this stuff we're seeing in the trailers, go look up the trailer, folk. It is in engine. It is the game running at its full power, and car games are always kind of the best ways to show off hardware. So this one is just like, it just feels like a huge flex from Microsoft. So I'm digging that. Quickly, Nintendo also happened earlier this week, and Matt Smith and I covered that. That was just a really baffling thing. Just super, super baffling, because we got a lot of small games. It started with Kazuya from Tekken. coming to Super Smash Brothers. And it, I think the ending for Kazuya is that his story is that he gets thrown into volcanoes or something, right? Volcanoes play a key role in Kazuya Mashima's life. And it opened with him throwing Ganon into the volcano. And there were some great Smash cuts later on of like every single Mario character getting thrown into the volcanoes. Kazuya in Smash. Smash is nice. Basically turning to a straight up fighting game right now. So that's cool.
I suck at Smash, just so you know.
Oh, great. So we should play. We should live stream Smash because I do feel like it would be great to shit talk you. Yeah.
No.
I would just play Jigglypuff and Shaman.
No, I hate she's so bad. So annoying.
Such an annoying
enemy. Most annoying characters.
How does the IP work when it comes to Super Smash Brothers?
Like everyone's friends. People want their characters in Smash because Smash is so big.
I remember like leading up to E3 that there were people saying like, "Oh, is Master Chief going to be in Super Smash Brothers?" Like, and honestly, it was
nothing
not that. Not that ridiculous a prospect.
Anyway, we did see, I'll talk about like Breath of the Wild 2, I think, at the end here. But Nintendo also resurrected Metroid Dread, a game that was originally announced around like for the Nintendo DS in 2005. So that game has had like a story development. I believe this is just a complete new build. It is a 2D side scroller with a 3D engine. Looks cool. Looks fine. It looks like a classic Metroid game. And I believe like it has like an enemy that's going to chase you throughout the environments too. So gets a bit of like the Resident Evil action in there. WarioWare looks wild as hell. And I am really down to play that. But yeah, like we should play WarioWare. We should just play WarioWare on a stream because this game is just pure chaos. Like it's just like random mini games. It?
Like the sort of games I always play. You could squeeze
a toothpaste. You could peel a face mask off. You could try to dodge pigeon poop. Like they're all like random little mini games.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
this is
made for you.
This is like the arcade games I used to play called Dash Dash.
Anyway,
awesome.
Basically, all those old crappy arcade games or flash games that you probably used to play. That's all WarioWare
is.
Awesome.
It's
complete
bonkersness. Yes.
And I believe there is local co-op now or local play. Yes. There is local co-op and you can still also fight against people locally, but there will be online play too. So we should just, wish we could just stream this at some point.
Yes.
That would be super down. WarioWare looks cool. And then we got a little bit of Breath of the Wild too. Just a little bit. Nintendo should just let the world will basically, you'll be exploring the world above the Hyrule map from Breath of the Wild. So it opened with Link falling out of the sky, going to these like island environments of floating in the sky, or kind of really reminds me of Laputa Castle in the Sky. So it's really going for that vibe. Sherlyn, you have a Nintendo Switch. Have you played Breath of the Wild yet?
Never play Breath of the Wild.
What are you doing? I'm
busy playing other lame games like
other lame games.
Smash games. Yes.
You should play Breath of the Wild because I do think like this is the original game is one of the best video games ever made.
It looks good.
It is incredible and it gives you a huge open world to explore. Even if you're not a Zelda fan, like I think you can get with it. It is a game that can be hard at times, but in terms of like sheer adventure and sheer like imagination, I cannot think of anything more than Breath of the Wild. Like Breath of the Wild, I was basically calling an infinite game for a long time because it felt like you could never finish it. Sure, you could find everything, but you know, it felt like there was always something else to do. And we don't know much about the sequel. I think they're aiming for next year.
I find the floating islands especially interesting because I remember at the very beginning when Breath of the Wild 2 or whatever it's going to end up being called, because I don't think that it's going to end up being called Breath of the Wild 2. Usually
that's the title we're running with right now. So
usually Nintendo is a bit more creative. They didn't call Majora's Mask Ocarina of Time 2. Think about that.
They didn't, but that game was not Ocarina of Time 2. That game was a weird side story. I can't believe they released. That game was great.
Yeah. Anyway, so
yeah,
when it was first announced, weren't a lot of people under the impression that it was going to actually be mostly underground rather than like floating islands or something? That's something that I remember from in the very beginning, which might have been a couple of years ago by now.
Might have been like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, might have been like 3 years ago. But like floating islands and the skydiving just reminded me a lot of Skyward Sword.
Sure, but we will never talk about that game again. the Skyward Sword HD remake is coming. I never liked that game.
I played through like 70% of Skyward Sword, but I didn't feel I didn't really feel the push to finish it.
Yeah, you're a tougher gamer than me. I just like they should bring that Wind Waker HD version, that remaster, over to Switch already. It's still not here. Maybe with all the floating islands, like I want to get some like verticality, like actual, like not just the leaf that throws you up in the sky, but like something that really launches Link so that you can fly more easily. So I'm looking forward to those dynamics, and the game looks good. What do you want to see from Nintendo Show Link? Because this is one you can actually, you have some stakes in, you have a Switch, you know, what else do you want to see?
I know there's probably some good horror games on there. I've played some shitty Resident Evil games on my Switch and not great. I want a good, like, good ass soul-sucking horror game that scares the living daylights out of me.
I think, did they announce Fatal Frame? I think they announced Fatal Frame, the next Fatal Frame.
They haven't made a new Eternal Darkness game in a while, have they?
I mean, that's, you're really going back. You're really going back now. But yeah, Fatal Frame, Maiden of Black Water, that is a new game coming. Fatal Frame is a game series where it's basically like Japanese Ghosts, and your only weapon is a camera, so you have to take photos of them. I believe some early versions of that game are up already on Switch, but the next one, it's coming later this year to Switch and all existing consoles. So you'd probably like that, Sherlyn.
I will look forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of horror, lots of good stuff. That is E3 this year. I really miss not being able to go and play games. That's all I miss. But yeah, happy Video Games Week, people. And I'm looking forward to playing some things later this year. Most games that were announced are coming in 2022 for obvious reasons. But I do think between this, I didn't talk much about Ratchet, but Ratchet and Clank, so good. That justifies the PS5. I think by the end of this year, if you have a next generation console, you'll have actual things to play. So I'm looking forward to that.
You might actually be able to get a next generation console.
Who knows? I cannot guarantee that. But, you know, I think as the gamers who really want it start to peel off, maybe you will find it somewhere. So good luck, everybody. Happy E3. Let's move on to some other news. And I guess there's OnePlus news. I don't know. I always felt like OnePlus and Oppo was already, or they were already like one company. But what's going on here, Sherlyn?
So, I mean, yes, after all of that E3 and Windows stuff, it felt like nothing else this week even really mattered. But then OnePlus, I mean, first it introduced a new phone called the Nord N200 5G. And this is just really quickly, just to say, this is part of the company's like Nord N series, more budget-friendly devices, and it's the first of the company's like sub $250 5G phones. We've heard about this, like the company has been teasing it for a while, and this week it officially announced that the price in the US is going to be $240 for a 5G phone with a Snapdragon 480 CPU. So great. Anyhow. The other bigger news surrounding OnePlus is that, yeah, OnePlus and Oppo, formerly kind of like sister companies, sort of under
was it, the OnePlus same was a brand. Subsidiary of Oppo. Like it seemed like it was in the name. Yeah.
It used to be under Oppo.
Yes.
And then now they're merging. They've been collaborating for a while. Like Oppo licensed out its fast charging tech to OnePlus too. But anyhow, so now OnePlus is becoming an Oppo sub-brand.
The merge. Doesn't the merge just mean OnePlus is downsizing? Doesn't it mean like Oppo is just eating up OnePlus rather than being an independent company or something? Yeah,
it could be, but they're both, they have both been owned by the same parent company anyway. So like you said, it does seem like, I don't think it's just OnePlus downsizing, right? I think it's both of them are going to pool their resources and kind of just be like, there's no wall between us anymore. We are not going to license tech out to you, just straight up use our tech. You know what I mean? Like there's less of that paperwork maybe to be done. I mean, again, this is like another big move in recent memory at OnePlus, right? Because what Carl Pei left fairly recently, and Carl Pei was one of co-founders and formerly a general director or someone like a director at large or something. And has now gone on to launch, let's not forget, Nothing, and then bought Essential. Lots of fun word games here, but lots of changes going on at OnePlus. in our own personal interactions or our own working interactions with OnePlus 2, there do seem to have been personnel changes. Does this mean anything is going to really, does this mean the company is going to go down a different path? It's hard to say. I know that a lot
they're trying to save money. I think that's all.
They're probably trying to save money. I don't know if it means they're doing very well or not very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see. But yes, this is interesting news. I think for OnePlus's fans, I think Oppo has always been sort of a similar style company, except for with a greater focus, I think, on China and other regions in the world outside of the US. So maybe US fans might be concerned, but I don't know. I feel like Oppo always felt on like the innovative end of things. And then OnePlus felt like it was high specs, low price. That was their whole thing.
That all kind of changed for them too. The Android phone market is just a wild, crazy place. So be careful out there, folks. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how many brands I'd like personally feel safe.
There's
by
so many
at this point.
There's so many.
Too many. I don't know how long the hardware will last. So be careful out there, folks. What else is going on in Google land, Trillin?
So in Android related news, every week there is new updates from Google land. And this week we've got the new set of Android updates. Last week we had Pixel updates. Now this is the broader ecosystem of Android is getting new features like starred messages. Hey, okay. The messages app for some reason continues to get updates as if anyone still uses text on Android. But you can star messages in the messages app and then go back to them later on, which is good for me. And I think this is kind of similar to like you can snooze notifications, right, in Android, but similar-ish to delaying and getting notification summaries from iOS 15. In a way, you kind of like just not looking at them until later. But this is a very specific to one app kind of feature rather than system-wide. The more interesting thing is that alongside these updates, Google also announced end-to-end encryption for the Messages app, which is interesting. It's a good feature to have. You can text people with more, I guess, peace of mind. This is only for one-to-one messages and not for group texts, by the way. But the group text interface and messages isn't great anyways. It's not like a lot of people were using them. But yeah, no, Android's getting start messages, more voice controls. Here's a feature that lets you, if you're using voice access to interact with your phone, which people who maybe, you know, have low visibility could be using, there is a way now to more easily enter passwords. And when some of our editors read the post, they came to me and they were like, this seems like a bad idea to like read out your password. Like, let's be clear. When you're reading out your password to enter into a forum, could you maybe be alone in a room and not out in public?
Just definitely a bad idea. Yeah.
Just general PSA.
Nobody listens to that stuff. I'm thinking of like when people used to like order stuff in catalogs too. They would just sit there and like recite their entire credit card number.
Social
and
then security.
The same people would be afraid of buying things online, which is vastly more insecure.
I just love listening to the shit that people say on the street sometimes. Speaking of the streets and the real world, Google's also launching its first ever physical retail store. This week, actually today, as we are recording this, about half an hour ago, the doors opened to the first store Google's ever had that's a permanent space in its Chelsea building here in New York. So the address is 76 9th Avenue, if you're ever interested to go check it out.
So they bought the Chelsea Market building. So they own an entire block, too, in addition to the Chelsea Market building, right?
I mean, they've always had the building that was kind of across the Chelsea Market. Yeah, I think the Chelsea Market building was bought more recently.
One of the old, like, mail postal service buildings.
Exactly.
Anyway, Google owns a lot of real estate in
space
New York,
down there. Right. Yeah. Which is why I guess it kind of makes sense that the first retail store opened in that neighborhood and in New York as opposed to, say, San Francisco.
Sure.
But here in this space, I mean, a lot of comparisons were being made, I guess, to an Apple store, for example. And Google has some things in this store that I don't think you'll find in an Apple store. You've got little, like, what they call sandboxes, which are these little areas set up to kind of show off its tech, like a little living room area where there is a giant screen that mimics a window and the passage of day and seasons. So you can have like winter or nighttime outside, and the Nest lights in that room space will change color or dim or whatever. So you can go in and interact with it. And there is going to be there's a Stadia sandbox because people play Stadia.
let me just say, this seems like a complete waste of time and money for everybody involved. But I can understand why Google set this up, right? Because these are its flagship New York buildings. So when they host events or they get like, you know, they get groups of folks over, they can be like, here's the spot with all of our toys. Yes. We'll close off the store, you know, for a morning or something for an event.
Oh, yeah.
That's really all. This is all marketing, right? This
yes,
really
I mean, that's part of it, right? Stuff. Like, yeah, there's dedicated workshop space, event space where they'll host, like, and Google's done this before in the past where it's hosted, like, cooking sessions with Aisha Curry or, you know, like, how to cook with a Nest display. That sort of event that we press have been invited to in the past. And they've actually been kind of fun. And I can imagine now they'll all happen at this store space so the public can attend them. Of course, COVID restrictions are going to be in place and evolve according to whatever the local and state and federal laws are. But for now, the in-store associates are going to be wearing masks and, you know, hand sanitizers all over the place, that sort of thing.
So, people in our live stream chat, by the way, are saying like it would be hilarious if Apple just opened a store across the street. There is an Apple store like a couple blocks away, right?
Down
like
I remember street, a that. A big one. Yes.
A huge one.
Oh my God, like on 13th Street-ish in the Meatpacking District, there's this big, huge Apple
space. Just walk down
space.
The street, folks.
Oh my gosh, with nice event space too. I remember attending another event at another Apple location, not the one quite so close to this Chelsea location, but Pele was launching a football app and he was using the Apple store space. That was amazing. I just I was front row. I almost touched Pele's foot. Anyhow.
Don't touch Pele's foot.
I did not.
Don't curse Pele, please.
I could, but I did not yet.
Anything else you want to add about the store? Sure, fine, whatever. Okay, Google, you do you. I don't think we're going to open many other stores at this point.
Not sure,
This is not like Microsoft stores where they actively tried to bring it to other areas in the country, you know?
Not sure, yeah. I'm not sure what their expansion plans are just yet, but it's also space for them to fix devices. And for those of you on the live stream, you can take a look at all the different cracked screens of Pixel phones that I have and understand how this is important to me. Hopefully these are free repairs, but you can schedule an appointment to go get your
why would they be free repairs?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But you can get them fixed same day and you can make an appointment and then you can be told when to pick up your device. You can wait in the store if you want. So that's a little handy thing I think that Google is offering.
What else is going on? I see we've got some news about
I'm just gonna shout them out in a list and recommend that you go check out Engadget.com to catch up on this news. So rapidly, this is what happened this week. Spotify launched its Clubhouse rival Green Room. Leica launched its own phone called the Phone One, and also U.S. lawmakers are thinking about making it easier for people to cancel their subscriptions, which that last one so
please.
Close to my heart.
Please
do it. It's so stupid. I get so angry at companies sometimes that they cheat. Mm-hmm. They make it so hard to cancel your subscription.
They're like, we can make it so easy for you to sign up, but it's just too hard to let you
signing up is so
on
tricky. To some sites, they're like, hit the checkout. This button is in bright red and bold, and then the no thanks, let's skip this is in tiny ass font. And
I'm looking at you, New York Times, super rich media company, which also involves you still have to call somebody to cancel your subscription.
Yeah.
So
it's not cool. Not cool. You should be able to just hit a button and cancel and know that your account info has been deleted off the servers. But anyhow, hopefully this is this bipartisan bill, by the way, passes and then it'll be law, hopefully, eventually. But that was good news. Check it out, all of it, all the details on everything I just shouted out on Engadget.com.
Let's move on to what we've been working on. And if you can't tell, I'm doing a lot of prep for the Microsoft event. I'm pinging to see if we could talk to anybody. I think we're going to have some time to chat with Microsoft folks after the event. So it should all be fun. Stay tuned next week for a lot of Microsoft, you know, Windows 11 news. And hopefully it looks like an even bigger upgrade than this leak we've seen. Trillin, what's up with you?
I think I have maybe 7 ongoing reviews at this time. I finally finished the review for the laptop I've been testing the last 2 weeks or so. So stay tuned for that to come out soon. If not later this week, then early next. But yeah, I'm reviewing the Fitbit Lux, which we have. And it's a basic tracker in the body of a beautiful tracker. Mm. I don't know. And then a bunch of phones, bunch of things, bunch of other things I can't talk about. But if you've seen the news, you know what's coming. And I'm trying not to die. Also prepping for the Microsoft event in the midst of all of that, which will be fun. Sure.
Should be fun. Man, I feel like that's going to be the last major tech event for a little while. I hope, cross my fingers. Because we've gone from like WWDC to E3 to everything. And like,
usually around this time too, actually maybe a little earlier than this in the year, Dev, you and I usually covering Tribeca, but this year we haven't been able to devote a lot of time.
Anytime. To like there was some stuff happening at Tribeca virtually and they even had some in-person stuff. I'm just like,
yes,
I don't, we're done, guys. I'm cooked.
There's too much going on.
And nobody, you know, Tribeca as a show too is one where it's like nobody actually really cared about the movies or anything. We went for the VR. But hopefully we'll get some of that stuff to cover. I do plan to be looking at the new HTC Vive Pro and the Focus 3. So that's another thing to look forward to. Let's move on to our picks. What you got this week, Shirley?
So this is my leftover from last week because I had too many and I was an overachiever. I actually have more to recommend, but I will stick to just 2 this week, I believe. Number one, I mean, we were also just talking about Loki episode 2 just before we start recording this segment. But by the way, if you haven't seen Loki, go watch it. Now, my main recommendation this week is this series. And I'm so nervous about your reaction to this, Dev.
Oh, boy. I'm ready.
This TV series on Netflix called Zoo.
Of course you're watching Zoo. Yes. Of course you're watching it.
Do you hate it? Why do you hate it?
I don't hate it. I think when the show came out, I started watching a couple episodes. It had a reputation for being one of the craziest shows on TV, right? Because it's what is it about? It's just animals go crazy, right? So the whole
premise, exactly, yeah. The whole premise of Zoo is that mankind has been top of the food chain, but it's not really actually top of the food chain. It's actually because of the technology.
It's very fringe. It's very fringe, except if the animals went crazy.
The animals, started developing new skills. So it's basically like X-Men, but animals, right? Like the animals are all mutating. They have new skills. So the other things that I started watching a new series after Zoo, and I won't say what it is yet, but it's basically the very like early 2000s or even the 2010s sort of era of post Lost or in the same time frame as Lost type of show where it's like
there were so many post Lost like things. God.
So many heroes, Fringe is sort of there, but not really. But that sort of pacing, that sort of storytelling, it sucks me in. I think there's this show with Kevin Space, kid with the numbers. Guy in 24, Kiefer Sutherland.
Okay.
Sutherland? Yeah, Touch, I think is the name of this TV series.
Yeah.
Or his
that
son.
Big budget show.
Yeah. And then there was 24, there was Flash Forward, all those shows.
No, 24 was before Lost. 24 was like ahead of, like 24 sorry, yeah, helped.
I didn't
like,
mean 24.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It was 24 and Alias, I think, were like came around the same time and were like these, hey, you could do kind of like mid-budget action movie on TV now and people would be into it. So that's something. Well, I hope you're enjoying Zoo, Sherlyn. I hear so it gets quickly, even crazier. Yeah. Yeah.
To finish it really quickly, Zoo stars Billy Burke. I know him from freaking Twilight of all things. Yeah. And it's about these animals and this team of like a forensic pathologist or something. Mm-hmm. Tripping on words right now. But the it gets a little crazy and it gets a little far out there in the later seasons. But the first season was really enjoyable, very gripping. Just the idea that animals are reclaiming their spots at the top of the food chain by mutating or just like thwarting human technology. I thought that was really cool. I have one more recommendation because I can never stop at one. But my second recommendation Greenland, by the way. Have you seen it?
That is on my list of things to see. I hear it's a Gerard Butler movie that is actually better than it should be. Like, it's a disaster movie. And it has Miranda Baccarin in, who I love. So, yeah, sure. I'll watch that.
So Greenland is, an apocalyptic movie, the world coming to an end, and parts of it are very hard to watch because...
Is it just comets, or is it like a big asteroid? What's going on?
It's sort of comets. It's basically like different debris is falling down from this comet that they thought was going to pass the Earth, but actually, no, it's headed right for Earth. And it's lots of, like, it's a big tail of big chunks of debris, and the last one's gonna hit and destroy Earth, right? But they have underground bunkers that they're trying to head to in Greenland.
Yeah,
of course they do. So Gerard Butler, you know, loves his disaster movies, I guess, because Geostorm is basically Geostorm. which I did watch too. And Morena back, I was like, where do I know her from? She's from Deadpool. Does a great job too.
And Firefly. Come on. Deadpool.
I haven't seen it. Yeah, she was also in Firefly. You're right. Mm-hmm. But it was a great disaster movie. If you wanted to watch it, the acting is good. Parts of the story were slightly annoying, but eventually it works out. I did enjoy it. So
I'm looking forward to it. I'm basically in the process of setting up a projector screen too. So I do feel like I need a big movie to do this with. So Give me something to watch on a 120-inch projector screen. I feel like this would be a good one.
Yeah. I'll also say that Greenland just got green lit for a sequel. So
sure, he is so good at that. Gerard Butler in sequels,
good for him. So
how many times did he save the president or was framed for trying to kill the president? Like that's at least three movies.
Trying to remember. I remember Geostorm. I remember this one. And then I can't remember the last one.
It's London Falling, all those things.
One of those. One of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go with, you want to mention anything else? Really?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done with my two. So a TV series and a movie. So there you go.
A bunch of stuff. Okay. I want to shout out, of course, In the Heights, which just dropped on HBO Max. It is the Jon Chu film adaptation of the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical too, and also written by Chiara Alegria Hudes, who doesn't get enough play, I think, when we're talking about these things. Celebration of Washington Heights in New York. Let me tell you guys, as somebody who's been missing New York really hard and like everything about it, like the sights and sounds, the bodegas, my bodega crew, the good like Puerto Rican food I get from my wife's family, like I'm missing all of it. And watching this movie, it is really hard to watch it as a former New Yorker and not tear up.
Yeah.
It is such a great celebration of New York and immigrant communities in New York. And like it is also just a fantastic musical. When I reviewed this on the Slash Filmcast, my main takeaway is that Jon Chu did not have to go so hard for this movie, right? It is an incredible, like, the musical is good. You can have a couple people singing and dancing in the street, like, fine, it'd be good. He's got hundreds of people in huge, like, choreographed sequences in the middle of, a major New York street. And in the middle of one of the huge pools in Washington Heights too, like the sheer level of like complexity of the choreography and the actual work and the camera work and the technical aspects of it too. Like it's a great film with great characters. I think the songs are great. It's fantastic. So check out In the Heights, especially if you can see it in theaters. And I do miss the fact that I would have loved so much to see this in a crowded New York theater, you know, like this is what this movie was made for. It's good. It's good. Yes. Check it out.
What do you think about the criticism of it not featuring enough Afro-Latinx?
Yeah. I'm glad we're talking about that because that's a thing. A lot of like Latin media. And honestly, it's a thing of like a lot of media in general. You look at Bollywood movies, you look at movies of any film industry from around the world. Colorism always plays a role. It's always lighter skinned folks who become stars or who are celebrated, and that's like the virtue. So I think this film kind of falls victim to that as well. Honestly, even Jon Chu's last movie, like Crazy Rich Asians, love the movie. There weren't really many brown Southeast Asians in that.
You know, that really pissed me off because there was maybe one or two Indian people.
There was one
in that
like
movie.
Sick guard that they were afraid of because he was kind of scary. Right.
He's guarding the rich person's place, and then
because he's a brown man. Yeah,
but in Singapore, there's so many more Indian and Malay people than that. This is really annoying for me to see. I was just like, I mean, okay, look, I get it that like Chinese people are predominantly more of the rich people, but there's very rich Indian people in Singapore
for
too.
Sure. For sure.
And that was just very annoying to not.
This is
not
why we just gotta keep bringing it up. So as much as I love Crazy Rich Asians, I love In the Heist, but I do think you gotta hold creators to account. It's a good conversation to have. So don't I don't think it's enough to boycott this movie. I don't think they're actively trying to keep people out in some respects, but the inability to think about skin color representation is a big issue, and we got to keep bringing it up. That's the main thing. And speaking of good representation, I just want to shout out again, We Are Lady Parts on Peacock. I think I talked about it last week or the other week. Yeah. But I did finish it, and it's only 6 episodes. It's basically a 3-hour movie. It's about a 20-something Muslim girls doing a punk band. This show rules so hard. Having finished it, it is fantastic, and I want everybody to see it. You do have to subscribe to Peacock to see the whole season, but I do think it's worth it. Maybe they'll make it available for sale on iTunes or something later. But yeah, love it. You never see actual practicing Muslims on TV like this. They're just girls. They're young girls who want to live their lives. Some of them are maybe more devout than others, but they all still consider themselves Muslim. They don't they're not atheists or anything. I do think that balance of following how people manage their faith while also trying to be a little anarchic and trying to be a little rebellious, how that all works together is really interesting to see. I've never seen anything on TV like it. So I want to shout that out. And real quick, the thing you mentioned, Sherlyn. So by bringing up Zoo, you're also reminded me that I'm watching Sweet Tooth on Netflix. So if you're looking for another good post-apocalyptic thing, this is based on a comic, which I hear is really dark and depressing. This is another basically virus destroys the world type thing, and then hybrid animal kids come about. So this is a good follow-up for you from Zoo, Sherlyn. It is a very sweet show so far. I think it is really, I don't think pandemic stuff and virus, destroying the world media is great for everybody right now, but this one is a very sweet story about a little boy who is basically orphaned early on and has to team up with somebody who usually hunts human hybrids. There's a lot of X-Men in here. There's a lot of I feel like Why the Last Man too. Is a really good looking show, really well written, and it's shot in New Zealand too, so it feels epic in the way that a lot of American produced things don't. There are a lot of those big Lord of the Rings camera angles. I'm really digging it. Check out Sweet Tooth as well.
I've been seeing the not ads, but the kind of teaser type things for it on Netflix, and I have it on my list. I just didn't think I want to check it, because it seemed so child-centric. I was worried that it would be a more child-friendly show than
apparently the comic is even worse. The comic is just brutal. So they sweetened the show up quite a bit. And I appreciate that.
That's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I chat about movies at /filmcast@slashfilm.com.
If you want to send me more TV shows of that time of TV, I guess, right after Lost, their mysteries that suck you in.
So many. Yeah.
Yes. Send them all to me at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts, feedback, and questions at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.